Today on Maine Calling, mobile home parks and affordable housing in Maine. For decades, mobile home and manufactured home parks in Maine have offered a relatively affordable option for people to own their own home and be part of a neighborhood. But recently, market forces and land investors have changed the equation. More and more mobile home parks are at risk of closing or being bought by corporate entities, leaving residents few options. A new law is designed to help them buy and run their communities. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we look at the role of mobile homes in Maine's housing market and how they might be a part of the solution to the affordable housing crisis. This program is part of our series, The Cost of Living, Maine's Housing Shortage. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth. From investments to trustee services, more at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. You can't talk about affordable housing options without considering mobile and manufactured homes. But the landscape for these is changing as land values rise. Today, we're going to discuss what some residents are doing to keep their homes and when mobile or manufactured homes might be an option for others. Today's show is part of our series, The Cost of Living, Maine's Housing Shortage. With me, Liza Fleming Ives, who is Executive Director of the Genesis Fund, Nora Goslin with the Cooperative Development Institute's New England Resident-Owned Communities Program. She's Market Development and Acquisition Specialist there. And Eric Jorgensen, Senior Director of Government Relations and Communications with Maine Housing. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you lived in a mobile or manufactured home? Have you been part of one of these fights to keep your park a community? Or have you considered buying one? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Eric, I understand that what most people refer to as mobile homes have been around since the 1950s, real heyday in the 60s and 70s. And you drive around Maine and you see these parks where many mobile homes are gathered together, and it's clearly a community. Give us a sense of how many of those there are in Maine. How many mobile home parks? How many people live in manufactured homes in Maine?
Sure. And I really appreciate being here. Thank you for having me. So I was looking at the census records from before the pandemic. That was the most recent place I could find these. But those showed that there were around 60, 61, 62,000 mobile homes in Maine. And I use that term maybe interchangeably with manufactured housing, but they're grouped in around somewhere around 700 mobile home parks that are licensed here. And some of those parks are just a few units. Others are in the hundreds of units. And those units are often on their own lots as well. So they're not always in parks. And while we'll be focusing today on mobile home communities, I hope people will think about this type of housing in a general sense. It's a very important component of affordable housing overall. And we like to describe this as naturally occurring affordable housing, because that means it's affordable without sort of a government subsidy.
That's right. And 62,000, give or take a few, is a lot of homes in Maine. I mean, this is a significant number of people living in what are referred to either as mobile homes or manufactured homes.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing about them, I think, is that these units generally cost less to buy or get into than a traditional home. And the affordability comes from the fact that they're built in factories. They're built under controlled conditions. They're transported to the site where they're finally assembled. And so therefore, they can be produced less expensively than with traditional construction. And I guess I'd just add that, you know, it's important to note that a modern manufactured home is quite different from your grandpa's mobile home. It's not the same. They can be very, very energy efficient. They're structurally robust. They're built to a federal building code that's specified by HUD. And in some cases, these structures look indistinguishable from the kind that you of traditionally built housing that you see. So that's quite different from the mobile homes in the 60s or 70s that you might remember. But overall, I think even though the quality is now there, they still are less expensive to occupy. So they're really a great form of housing here in the state.
Nora, when we're talking about parks, has the traditional method or the traditional way of doing this, the person who lives at the park, they own the actual home itself, but then they lease the land that they live on and often live there decades, even a lifetime. Give us, so you're nodding. So yeah, it's how it usually works. Give us some numbers. How much can a home cost? How much does rent usually cost?
It really varies. So I think I'd say, you know, a home can be as, you know, ranging costs from $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to we see homes $50,000, $60,000. And then today homes will sell over $100,000. In some communities across, now I'm speaking just across all of New England, we see homes sell upwards of $200,000 depending on the market. And then site rent, so in a land lease community like you're describing, site rent will range anywhere from, you know, the 200s, the 300s, depending on the location. But nowadays, especially in, you know, what are kind of billed as the more attractive, like lifestyle communities right on the coast, we see rents 600, 700, up to $800. So that's really a wide range that also really reflects who is owning and operating these manufactured housing communities.
Right. So still those numbers, though, if you're comparing it to, I'm looking right now, the average home for sale right now in the Portland, Maine market, $650,000. So we're still talking about a fraction of what it would cost to buy a non-manufactured home in much of Maine.
Yeah, absolutely. And also compared with apartment rents, what we see is when these like large private equity or real estate investment trust purchasers come in, they use a benchmark of two bedroom apartments. And when we stand up and present and speak and work with residents, they'll say, well, where else do I live? I don't share my wall with anyone. I have my own standalone home with my own yard, and I don't need to deal with my neighbors, you know, the same way you would in a two bedroom apartment in Portland. And the rent tends to be about half that price. So it's really, really advantageous.
So Liza, Nora has just touched on the thing that's happening, the elephant in the room here that we've been seeing for about a decade now. We've been seeing a real change, a real shift in the landscape for these mobile home parks, these manufactured home parks. Tell us what's happening. Nora mentioned investors that are coming in, corporate entities.
That's right. Many communities in New England were, you know, developed by mom and pop owners and have been owned in that way for many years. And that's beginning to change. So what we're seeing is more and more communities changing hands and being bought by corporate entities. And that's been happening across the country for many years now, but we're beginning to see that happen more and more in Maine. And it's beginning to create a threat around the ongoing affordability of these communities for the residents that are there.
And are these corporate entities buying this land because they want to redevelop it, or are they just buying it and then upping the rental price, or both?
I think it's both. I think largely what we're seeing now is that it is to own them and continue to operate them as manufactured housing communities. But it is coming with increases in that lot rent for residents. I think we do have areas of the state where there are mobile home communities that may be purchased, and there's consideration of a change of use.
All right. Well, Eric, I understand there's a new state law designed to help the people who live in these communities. Tell us about it.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of very interesting things that have happened in the legislature in the last session. I just want to do a quick shout out. We have a housing committee at the legislature, which I know has been mentioned other times on this program, but they've done an amazing job focusing really strongly and broadly on the whole housing question from different directions. And one of the things they came up with this last session has been was a law that would provide notification of the sale of a mobile home community or a park. When that park was up for sale or listed, then people would have to notify my office, Maine Housing, and let us know about it. They also have to notify the residents, so the residents can be aware of it. And I think the opportunity there is, while that's a pretty neutral act, nothing necessarily has to happen at that point. But the fact that the residents know about it means that they can then think about what options might exist for, you know, preserving affordability, because I think that's the real worry.
All right. And let's talk about that, Nora. This law is already being used. Tell us about the community in Brunswick, Lynn Haven. What's happening there? How did they use this new law that let them know what was happening earlier than they might have found out earlier?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I'd add to what Eric shared. We really cannot like stress enough how important even just knowing that the sale is happening is in this housing. Because we've worked with residents at CDI where they'll say, I got a letter the next day, here's where you send your rent. I never even knew about it. And it's just, it's really, they have a relationship with the land because that's where their biggest asset is. They deserve to know when it's being sold. I feel like they, you know, and the legislature felt, and all the advocates felt that they deserve to know price terms and conditions so that they could come and be a competitive buyer, same as, you know, another third party. So with the group in Lynn Haven, at Lynn Haven in Brunswick, that is a 278 home community that's been owned by the same family since, you know, the 1950s, many generations of the same family. And it was, they received notice that the community was being sold, what the sale price was, the terms and conditions. They got the actual purchase and sale agreement that was submitted by a third party buyer to the family owner operator. And that was back in March of this year. The residents came together. I mean, huge community, so it's difficult to do anything with that many people. And they did it like lickety split, doing a petition drive, you know, forming their cooperative. They picked the name Blueberry Fields Cooperative, which was great because they're right next to the blueberry fields. And they put in their own purchase offer right before Memorial Day. And they heard right after Memorial Day from the family that owns the community that, you know, that family wanted to give them an opportunity. I think the mindset was really, you've supported our business for, you know, 70 years, like you deserve an opportunity to be a purchaser here and to preserve and protect your housing. So since then, CDI, Genesis, Maine Housing, the town of Brunswick, the board of directors, all resident volunteer, 11-person board, in public meetings that have been attended by upwards of 100 people at the high school just next door, have gone through this whole, you know, commercial real estate process and this cooperative development process. So two very time-consuming things that they have accomplished in essentially just a matter of months, meeting every week, every Thursday night. You know, it was a challenge when, you know, it was very hot and we were sweating in the high school cafeteria, but they've gone through this whole process and with Maine Housing and Genesis and the town really just been able to come to the closing table.
And the closing is any day now, right?
Any day now.
Okay, that's great. But it's a done deal. Let me ask you, Nora, is your hope that as word of this gets out, that in the future, a family that's thinking of selling might first go to their tenants and say, would you be interested in buying, instead of the traditional, you know, going to a commercial broker, finding the highest bid? I mean, is this the hope, Nora?
Definitely the hope. There are 10 resident-owned communities that date back to 2009 here in Maine. And those are situations where they predate the opportunity to purchase law. And those park owners came right to the residents because of exactly how you're saying. They thought, you're our best buyers. So now with this opportunity to purchase law and this kind of proof of concept that it can work for these large communities as well as these small communities, the hope is definitely that there's more of these types of transactions happening.
So Lynn Haven will be the biggest community for this so far. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, great. We're going to go to Pamela, who's calling from Alfred. Hi, Pamela. Go ahead.
Hi. This topic is so dear to me. We've downsized to a mobile home, but we are lucky to have a home on a private piece of land. And what I've seen is the way that investors are coming in and they're pricing people out of housing, and it's troubling. I find the mobile home living is so much easier, and I love it. I can't say enough about it. But I have to say, it's going to remove that affordability. You know, when the investors come in and then they decide to up the rent, I'm so glad that they're focusing on it, because it's a really important part of the whole process. The other thing I want to talk about is private land being changing some of those zoning laws, where you might be able to put like an extra mobile home on, say, the right size piece of land. Because I think, like, you know how your extended families now are forced to live at home. Some of the viable options in the future, we need to kind of look at ways in which to kind of, if we could put two mobile homes on a certain size lot, that would make it more feasible. And then, you know, say someone in your family wouldn't have to pay that rental fee, you know, the fee for the
right.
for the renting of the space. Yeah.
Pamela, this is a great topic that you're bringing up, and we have to go to a break, but I want to return. Please continue to listen, because I want to return to the topic of zoning and how towns can, or should they, I mean, a question to put out there, make it more amenable to putting mobile homes, manufactured homes, on existing lots. But we do need to go to a break. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about mobile or manufactured home communities in Maine. It's part of our series, The Cost of Living, Maine's Housing Crisis. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about how residents of mobile and manufactured home parks are trying to take ownership of their communities to ward off corporate entities that often make their housing unaffordable. And we're talking about manufactured homes generally as part of Maine's affordable housing crisis. With me, Nora Goslin with the Cooperative Development Institute's New England Resident-Owned Communities Program. Eric Jorgensen, Maine Housing Senior Director of Government Relations and Communications, and Liza Fleming Ives, the Genesis Fund's Executive Director. Share your comments and questions. What do you think of this movement to save mobile home parks? Have you considered living in a manufactured home yourself? You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now, Janet Fournier. She is a resident of Lynn Haven Mobile Home Park in Brunswick and the board president of the Blueberry Fields Collective. Thanks so much for joining us, Janet.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
How long have you lived in Lynn Haven, and how did you choose to live there?
I moved into Lynn Haven in August of 2023. And I found out shortly thereafter that the property was going to be sold. I chose Lynn Haven for a number of reasons. One, it's affordable, for, it meets my lifestyle. Lynn Haven is well-maintained to the highest standards. And it's in Brunswick. Brunswick is where I wanted to be, but it was the only type of housing that in my current state it was affordable for me. And it's a coastal town. I have a beautiful backyard with acres of blueberry fields behind me, thus our name of the cooperative. It's got great back roads for cycling. The downtown area is lovely. So it was my only choice. I did look at other mobile home parks, but they didn't fit my standards.
Before you started organizing, tell us what you heard. What did you find out? Who was set to buy Lynn Haven, and what was that going to mean for you and other residents?
Well, I knew just shortly after I signed the documents in the office of the Lynn Haven Mobile Home Center, directly from the owner, Kurt Scarponi, telling me that he was selling. And so from there, my mind started running. How can I fix this? How can I fix it for myself? How can I fix it for the other members of the community? So I started talking to people. I talked to Mr. Scarponi. I talked to friends of mine. And ultimately, I found out about the Cooperative Development Institute and that they were looking to help folks purchase the park. And so I started connecting first with Pat Schwebler and then with Nora Goslin. And the rest is history. We have had an amazing process with a group of residents. There are 277 folks that live in the community, and it's been quite an experience.
Wow. Liza, I'm going to have you jump in. Tell us about the financing. You helped with that.
That's right. The Genesis Fund has actually provided financing for all 10 of the communities that are resident owned in Maine. And we've been assisting in bringing the financing together for the purchase of the Lynn Haven community. And as Nora mentioned earlier, it involves a number of different partners coming together in a really creative way to make this happen. It includes loans both from Maine Housing and from the Genesis Fund, and then grant funds from the town of Brunswick, which has really been supporting this effort in a very significant way. It's a lot of housing in Brunswick. And then this purchase is also benefiting from a brand new mobile home community preservation fund that was made available, supported by Governor Mills and the state legislature in the last legislative session. A very flexible pool of funds that is intended to be used for just this purpose, to be able to support resident purchase.
Janet, I have to ask you, what now? Do you hire a manager? Is there a new committee that takes care of issues? Now going forward, how will Lynn Haven be different?
Lynn Haven will be run by a property manager. We've hired someone. They will come on board as soon as we finish closing. We haven't done that yet, but we're just days away from that. And this particular company will handle the financial end of things as well as the property itself. And we will still have a governance of the 11-member board and with the support of the Cooperative Development Institute.
Great. I bet you know your neighbors better than you ever imagined.
You know, that's been one of the best parts of this whole experience, bringing people together. Sharing, I have a huge belief in the power of positivity, and our theme was just believe. And bringing folks on board, where initially there were just a handful, to when we had our vote to continue with the process just towards the end of August, the Saturday, I believe it was the 24th or 5th, and we had a unanimous vote, 187 folks voted yes.
Well, Janet, thank you so much for calling and sharing with us. Janet Fournier, resident leader at Lynn Haven Mobile Home Park in Brunswick. Eric wants to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, her story was amazing. And I think that, you know, this unanimous vote is such a great vote of confidence in the residents of the community, in CDI. But I also want to really underscore, I think, the heroic quality of both the town of Brunswick, which really came up with some money, which is a hard thing to do in a municipality. And they've really been pushing this issue and really wanting to organize this. But also, I think the owner of the park, Mr. Scarponi, I don't know him, but I mean, it's an incredible thing for him to have said, okay, I'm going to be the first to take this kind, I'm not the first in the state anyway to do a co-op, but he was taking an offer on the table and saying, I'm going to take a different offer and take a different route. And, you know, that's just an incredibly good thing to see that happen.
Great, Janet. Thank you so much. We're going to move on. We're going to go to Marie, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Marie. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I think, thanks for having this show, by the way. I think the cooperative thing is the only way people should live in a park. I live in a park that was bought up by a private equity firm. I've been here 28 years. And it is very, very difficult to live under these private equity firms because I'd say mainly because the state's laws about mobile home parks are quite lax. They're not clear. Like you have a tree hanging over your house and they'll tell you, the park owners, it's not that responsibility. Yet they will harass people. Say somebody's 80 years old and the guy didn't come to mow their lawn. They will harass them, about that, and say they're going to charge $85 if they don't get the mowing done. And on it goes. And a lot of people are very, very fearful because they know there's no housing. You get no amenities at all. So you're paying, like, around the Bangor area, $500. You add in all your utilities and maintenance and repairs. And you may have a mortgage, you may not, and you add that up. It's not cheap anymore. And like people say, where do we go? Well, most people would like to leave. And when we say it's like living under a form of occupation, you just feel like you never know when you're going to get harassed by somebody. And I think that's a horrible thing, and I think it's a horrible thing for the older people especially. I'll give you an example. A woman, her husband died. She goes to the office and reports that she's lived here several years. And they told her she wasn't really a resident and that she had to re-sign a lease, that her name wasn't on the lease. And most people, by the way, don't have one. And her name was on it, but she went through this whole thing. And there was another woman, the same thing happened, who's been here 28 years. And it just, you know, they'll tell an older person, you have to get your roof repaired. They did this to a woman that was 99 because she's died since, and she was crying outside on her deck. That kind of stuff needs to be addressed, Jennifer, and nobody wants to talk about it.
Marie, thank you so much for calling, and I'm so sorry to hear these stories. Liza, as Marie was talking, you were nodding. You've heard stories like this.
Yeah, we have heard stories like that, and it's so challenging to hear that and to know that that's happening. And I think, you know, one of the things that we see sort of when a community becomes resident owned is that they are able to participate in those decisions about their community, how they keep their community, how they address infrastructure needs in their community, how they set park rules, how they support each other, how they set lot rent. And what we see, you know, is that they can come together and they're able to make those decisions collectively. Address those kinds of things together as a community.
Yeah. And Eric, as you listen to Marie, would you like to see laws that address some of the things she was talking about, who's responsible for what in a community and some sort of repercussions if the owners do not follow those laws?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I know that the Housing Committee really tried to go further this last session on a few laws, but I think these issues are going to continue to come up. And I'm just grateful for organizations, particularly like CDI, which are in there to help figure out how do you make these relatively fragile communities strong? And that's what, you know, community ownership does. And I would suspect you probably heard some great or some horror stories from, you know, in your travels, Nora, around and seeing some of these things that have happened.
Yeah, I would definitely say, Maria, I'm so sorry that's the situation. It's really not uncommon, which is so unacceptable, especially with these real estate investment trusts, especially when they're out of state. And, you know, a lot of folks living in manufactured housing are senior citizens, fixed incomes, families, disabled folks, veterans, like people who deserve decent housing like everyone else, and they shouldn't have to be concerned about like like rural stuff like that. Do the roads get plowed appropriately? And the company's in Arizona, so they're not even seeing like, you know, what, how the plow's being handled or the trees hanging over the home. So they're not, unfortunately, uncommon. And, you know, it can be all the fun stuff of running a democracy with your neighbors in a resident-owned community, but you do see protection, you know, because people watch out for each other. So would love to see more things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate, Marie, you calling in, and I hope that something happens to improve the situation where you live. Joining us now is Margaret Jones. She's board president of Mountainside Community Cooperative, a resident-owned community in Camden. Thanks for giving us a call, Margaret.
I'm happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your story. How long have you lived there, and what led to your choice to live in this manufactured home park?
Well, I've lived at Mountainside for 8 years, and basically it was the housing market, you know, having no control over rent, having no control over anything. And I found a lovely park with what I thought was very stable owners, and put in a new unit. And about 3 years later, lo and behold, for health reasons, the owner of our park decided he needed to sell. And so, of course, the entire community went into panic mode. Being in a tourist area, most anything could have happened. And fortunately, our owner cared. He was not like the conglomerates from out of state. He cared about that park, and he cared about the people in it. And he actually arranged for us to meet with CDI and start the process of owning our own community.
Mm. How long ago was that?
We are now, as of December, we will have been a resident-owned community for 5 years.
How's it going?
Well, for the most part, it's going very well. To begin with, you know, when you become a rock, and you go through this whole resident-owned thing, you have so much assistance from CDI and from Rock USA in a good governance and training for the owners and that sort of thing. But then, typical of many manufactured home communities, you inherit some very interesting infrastructure issues. But on the whole, it's a very positive experience.
Well, Margaret, you know, I say any group of human beings in one place is not going to be perfect in terms of communication or getting things done smoothly. But thank you so much for calling in, Margaret Jones with the Mountainside Community Collaborative in Camden. We're going to go to Cheryl, who's calling from Harpswell. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? I'm the current State House representative for Harpswell and part of Brunswick, and I also sit on the Housing Select Committee. And Augusta, and I just wanted to say in agreement with Eric on the fact that manufactured housing and mobile homes is something important to reduce housing costs. I'm very excited for the Lynn Haven tenants in Brunswick to be able to purchase their mobile home. I think it's going to show a path forward for other mobile home parks to be able to purchase that. I did hear you mention zoning before I got online with you, and I just wanted to mention that I sponsored a bill, LD337, last year, which was put into effect that will it provides that the municipalities must allow manufactured housing wherever single-family dwellings are allowed. Subject to the same design criteria and stuff. So I think that's also going to help reduce costs.
Cheryl, do you believe that that has support, that your bill, do you believe your bill has will have bipartisan support?
It's passed. It's signed into law.
Oh, great. Okay.
It didn't get any, there was no really big pushback against it.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for calling. So her bill, your bill, and let me be clear about this, Cheryl, this is to allow manufactured housing on single-family lots, that a town cannot say no manufactured housing on single-family lots.
Right. You know, there's always been a lot of stigma around manufactured housing and stuff, and this will provide that municipalities must allow manufactured housing wherever single-family dwellings are allowed.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and telling us about that law now. I was going to say bill. Cheryl calling in from Harpswell. And Eric, let's return to this idea of housing, because our caller earlier, Pamela, was talking about being able to add manufactured homes to an existing lot. Maybe somebody has a home and would like to put a manufactured home on it as an ADU, someplace for their parents or for their children to live. Do many Maine communities have zoning that prohibits this? And is that allowed to have zoning that prohibits this?
I'm not an expert in zoning, so I'll start with that. But I will say, first of all, I want to do a shout out to Representative Golick, who just called in, because she has been really pushing all sorts of issues relating to affordability, and particularly around the world of manufactured housing. But I was going to mention her bill, but I was also going to mention LD 2003, which passed a few years ago, which does provide, it loosens the regulations around small multifamilies on multiple units on one lot, but also allowing ADUs in towns, and towns have to figure out how to do that. And a lot of those ADUs are manufactured or could be manufactured housing. So I think a lot of the companies that actually produce ADUs would be definitely, they build them in factories, whether they look like mobile homes or something else. They're definitely an option, I think, for people who are trying to do this.
Well, we do need to take another quick break. We're talking about mobile homes, manufactured homes, and their role in solving Maine's affordable housing crisis. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, the role of mobile home and manufactured home parks in Maine's affordable housing crisis. This show is part of our series, The Cost of Living. Joining me, Eric Jorgensen with Maine Housing, Liza Fleming Ives with the Genesis Fund, and Nora Goslin with the Cooperative Development Institute. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook or Instagram page. Jen on Facebook says, please touch on the viability of mobile homes in the face of climate change. On one hand, the lack of a basement and the elevated guts of the homes provide protection from low-velocity flooding. But on the other hand, their long shape makes them more susceptible in strong gusting winds. Also, the older mobile homes are notoriously hard to heat and cool, and we are likely to continue facing temperature extremes. And Jen, I'm so glad you brought that up. I can't tell you how often watching the news when there's been a hurricane or a tornado or a horrible storm somewhere, it seems as though the people who are living in mobile homes are those who have been affected the worst. So I don't know which of my panel members wants to talk about this aspect of this topic.
I think it's a great question. I mean, it's... But I would say the building codes are evolving. Mobile homes are built, or manufactured housing today is built under the HUD code, which is a federal code. And I do think there's a lot of effort to, evolve it into more and more energy efficiency particularly. But I also think it depends on a local building code, perhaps on how it's anchored to the ground or that sort of thing. But I don't really have an answer to some of the climate related issues that the caller brought up or the writer brought up. But I think it's a great question.
Yeah, but you also at the very beginning of the program wanted to point out that manufactured homes are not what they used to be.
They definitely aren't. Yeah. And I think that they're real housing. And I would just say that again, manufactured housing is housing just like any other home. And I think particularly when you get a modern one, you really have a robust structure. And there's a lot of stuff that's been going into these. There's a lot of work that's been done on, working around energy efficiency and trying to make sure that, I think climate impacts are things that are being discussed at this moment, probably by different people in the state.
And I have an email here from C who says that she or he lives in a manufactured mobile home, and I love my home. Go ahead, Liza.
I was just going to add that I do think that there are some new resources coming into the state, federal resources that are available to do things like weatherization and improve the energy efficiency of manufactured housing. And in fact, I think there was just an announcement of some new resources available for heat pumps in manufactured housing this week from Efficiency Maine Trust. And so there are some resources to make these homes even more efficient and address some of those needs.
Gail on Facebook writes, I live in a mobile home park in Saco, Maine. I moved into my brand new manufactured home in August of 2020. The rent was $360. In October of 2020, it was sold to a corporation in California. Over the course of 4 years, my rent has increased to $480 per month and an additional fee for water use. Originally, water was included in the rent. Although the rent has gone up $40 to $60 each year, the roads have not been improved. I'm frustrated that improvements aren't being made and concerned about the lot rental fees for new homes, which is $700. What can be done about the increases in rent for people on a fixed income? I am retired. Nora, what would you say to Gail?
I think I know the community Gail's speaking about. And I would say that definitely from, you know, Cooperative Development Institute, our kind of orientation, we always think that it's never too early to get kind of organized with your neighbors, because if you get that sale notice with these large companies, they do not have the same, you know, holding periods that a local family do, so that we do see those communities come up for sale 3, 5, 7 years. We always say it's good to get organized earlier as a homeowners association or a resident association, so you can be prepared to respond. And then also just we feel it's like, as I'm sure a lot of people do, you're stronger together. If you're organized, you can kind of work together to address these problems, and work with your local officials is what we always advise.
So let me be clear, Nora. Up till now, we've really been talking about parks in which there has been sort of the mom and pop owner, and they hear there's the possibility they could be sold to a corporate entity, and that's when all of you step in to help. But what you're saying is, even if you're owned by a corporate entity, get organized, because at some point that corporate entity is going to sell, and you want to be one of the potential purchasers.
Yes, that's my personal opinion, because if you get that sale notice, you have 60 days to respond. 60 days goes really quick. Just did it with a group. You know, it's always good to be proactive.
That organization come to you all now and say, how do we organize? How do we get together? How do we become a player here?
Yes, certainly. And you can find us online. I think my personal phone number is up. So we always have staff that is willing to talk with any resident in a situation like Gail's.
Great. We'll go to Edward, who's calling from Brooksville. Hi, Edward. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I totally am impassioned, because I know people in these type of situations where they're in a park where the owners are from out of state, and there's so many levels that they just shirk their responsibilities, and local people suffer. So any and all means, to buy them out or to just encourage local control, because I think that's one of the things of Maine is home rule. And so if there is a park where they have such things, I think we should encourage by any means legal, that is, to have encouraged the buyouts and controlled by the residents and not by some investment firm from away. But with that said, I also want to caution about the environmental impacts of going too far in the other extreme and almost mandating that, like, communities that just do not have the environmental infrastructure to absorb this type of housing, to some investor could come in and say, hey, the land's cheap here, it's beautiful, let's go stick a park in here. And maybe the local residents in a very rural area cannot absorb that economically, and it can also lead to a type of sprawl. So, you know, I think we have to have a balance, because home rule also goes to the people who live in communities. And there Edward, are a thank lot of you. Wolves.
Yeah, and Eric, this is really what Edward is saying is a whole big part of a whole bigger conversation right now about local control versus the need for, what is it, 80,000 new housing units in Maine in the next couple of years?
We do need up to about 80,000 units in the next few years, not right away, but it's definitely we're behind. And I think what the caller is saying is absolutely correct. I mean, mobile home communities are definitely subject to local zoning, and they do have a certain, you know, the towns have a certain amount of control over those. It's not like this, the state doesn't just come in and plop those down. But I think it's really important. I think the point I would just keep going on about this is that it's really important to try to remember the, how do you preserve the affordability? If you were going to build a place like Lynn Haven, say, which has 270 or so units, if you were going to build that as an apartment building or as a series of apartment buildings, it would cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and it would be very, very expensive to do. This is a, you know, the idea of preserving these places as opposed to letting them go out of affordability is probably the most important part of it, I think. And I think the more we can do to get owners to be able to, you know, exercise their rights to provide an offer that is competitive. I mean, I think an owner does have a right to sell their property. There's nothing, you know, that's a fact. But if you can make it so the residents have a way of coming in and being competitive, that's great.
Albert, thanks for your call. Liza.
Oh, I just add to that. I would want owners of mobile home communities to know that that there are financing partners in the state that are ready to work with owners groups. And, you know, in addition to Maine Housing and the financing partners we talked about that are supporting the Lynn Haven Park purchase, we have also worked with community banks in Maine to support the purchase of resident communities. And so there are a variety of financing partners that are really ready to step up to work with resident groups to, you know, make competitive offers and offer to be buyers of these communities.
And, you know, we just have a couple minutes left, and I just wanted to ask a big question here. We're talking about corporate entities here as though these are sort of big, scary, evil organizations from away. And I'm wondering, is there a variety? Are there some that are better than others? Some where they do maintain the parks well and don't the rents are not skyrocketing? Or in your experience, and I'll go back to you, Liza, in your experience, do you see that there is a pattern and the same thing pretty much happens every time?
Well, I think we're starting to see new corporate entities sort of come into Maine. And I think Nora has probably had more experience seeing
sure.
the variety of corporate entities that are, you know, that are now coming to own communities in Maine. I think we have seen, smaller sort of investment firms owning Maine communities for a long time. And many of them have maintained those communities, but
sure.
I think it's changing.
Go ahead, Nora, just a couple minutes.
Yeah, I think there's the way I kind of break it down is like there's different like categories. There's the large players that own nationally and sometimes internationally in Canada as well. The real estate investment trusts, the publicly traded companies, the way they kind of see it is residents are like, you know, items on their balance sheet. They got to report to their shareholders. There's also the like more regional or smaller mid-size operators. And then there's the family operators. So of that spread, there's definitely not, you know, not one size fits all, but we find that those largest companies where like, this is really, they don't see this as, you know, housing stock to maintain. They see it as let's keep the cost down and keep the rent high so I can turn it at a profit to justify what I went in and purchased it at. That's kind of a category unto itself. And I think that the partnership could really be between resident purchasers and those mom and pops to keep it local.
And is that what we're seeing more and more of? I mean, the larger corporate entities, I mean, that is indeed, you're nodding, that is indeed the trend that is happening in Maine and has been for the last few years.
Yes.
All right.
Especially the sale prices increase,
Increasing the sale prices increase. You know, one of the ironies, Eric, and we don't really have time to discuss this, is that there seems to be such enthusiasm for tiny homes. And you know, what's the difference between a tiny home and a manufactured home? Is there one?
Yeah, I think it's about dimensions probably, and there's all sorts of issues around tiny homes in terms of how they are zoned and that sort of thing. And again, I'm not an expert in that, so I'm not going to wade too far into that. But they're generally tiny homes, I think, are smaller than what we would call manufactured homes or
And
more.
Nora, with 5 seconds left, I think you're about to hit the nail on the head.
I was just going to add, I think it's a lot of stigma as well.
Yeah.
It's like one is a sexy thing and one is kind of cast aside, but one's already working and they're very similar. I think it's stigma that makes the difference.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. That was Nora Goslin, who works for Cooperative Development Institute. They have a program called New England Resident-Owned Communities, and she's the market development and acquisition specialist there. Eric Jorgensen, Senior Director of Government Relations and Communications with Maine Housing, and Nora Goslin, and Liza Fleming Ives, who is Executive Director of the Genesis Fund. Today's sound engineer, Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the added obstacles women and girls with disabilities face. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.